The new Hawaiian Bros Island Grill in Lubbock has all the vibes. Amazing island-inspired flavors, huge servings, super positive people, incredibly fast drive-through, an awesome rewards program, and this huli huli chicken with extra teriyaki sauce that's about to become my lunch. Hawaiian Bros, it's a vibe. Look us up at HawaiianBros.com for dine-in, pickup, or delivery.
Dieses Mal bei Sträter Bender Streberg.
I'm a movie buff all my life, and he's my son. And
what? Yes. You didn't tell me that.
Sorry.
Wow. And
I still have got my hair. So
yeah, I'm a little short. Yeah, that's another story.
I'm the granddad of both.
Und jetzt Sträter Bender Streberg, der Podcast.
So, thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. It's an honor.
Yeah,
it really is.
It really is an honor. And we just saw the movie, so our
literally.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. In the morning. Mm. Yeah. At 8 o'clock.
What?
In the morning, of course.
Which is yeah.
Today.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's
yeah, we are totally tired.
Our thoughts are
it's still fresh.
Still
our
fresh,
minds.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but before we go into detail, I have to ask you about the trailer. And was it fun to give away a major plot point that feels like the twist ending of the second act?
Mm.
And because I was irritated, I thought, well, maybe we right off the bat, we know he's a bad guy, but he's also the protagonist.
Mm,
So that was very interesting for me, and I was hooked right away.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't even occur to me not to tell. It was that when I thought of the movie, it was the same, let's say, as James McAvoy coming in a dress in Split and saying, don't worry, I'll talk to him. Let's see if he'll let you go. And then you realize these girls are being held by someone who has this disorder.
Yeah.
That you to give that away to set the movie up, that's the premise of the movie. I have to tell you the premise of the movie. The premise of the movie is there's a trap for a serial killer and you are the serial killer. Mm. So your emotions are going to be tied to his for the most part.
Yes.
And you'll root for him against your will for him to get out.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of the fun of the narrative point of view.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it the most difficult work to edit a trailer when you have made a movie?
You know, I have amazing partners. So, you know, I've made most of my movies now, in the last decade with Universal and Warner Brothers, and they are both the top of the top, and they have the best trailer cutters and people. So we talk at length about, so the people that are that are working on the trailer, they're the first person I meet, the first person I say, come to my house.
Hmm.
The creative person is the point person for me because they have to understand the story I'm telling, why I think it's universal, why I think it's going to connect, the angle of it, the tone of the movie, even before I make it. So they come to my house, I spend a ton of time, I show them my influences, I get them involved, like part of the storytellers. They are part of it. So when they're cutting the trailer and they're figuring it out, they're coming from the same place I am. So that's my philosophy of it.
So, yeah. So Trap is a thriller unraveling during a Taylor Swift-like concert. And so what is the origin from this idea?
You know, normally it's a very kind of simple way of making movies. I think of an idea, like my next movie, I have an idea. I write it down in a notebook and it either grows like a snowball or it doesn't. It's really simple. In this case, it was an intellectual conceit of me and my daughter talking and saying, hey, let's do something really different. Let's write, can you write an album directly for a narrative? If I wrote a thriller, could you write a whole album, 10, 12, 13 songs, 14 songs? And she said, I think I can. And so I said, let me think of a thriller of how we could do this, because Purple Rain has been one of our favorite movies, and I thought very distinct at its time, and since then, very, very, very hard to do what I just said, which is why it's been 40 years. It's extremely hard to do. And so we started talking, and I said, oh, what if it has to take place in some place where the characters would listen to songs, right, organically, because it's not scores. It's playing as a diegetic storytelling. And Purple Rain had it in a club, music club, so he's like, let's not do it in a music club. So a music festival or a concert, and I was like, well, maybe an indoor concert that's at least claustrophobic. Then why would we want to stay there the whole time? What tension could happen at a concert? And then I thought of this idea, and I told Salik, I said, what if they're trying to catch somebody at this concert and they set a trap?
But the songs aren't random songs. Mm-mm. Are they, is it fair to say they are a story device?
I mean, Salika, basically what I asked her to do is write 14 songs essentially in 10 months.
That's my next question. Yeah. In four years, maybe?
No, in 10 months. That's why it's so impossible to do. Like, when you think of those individuals that are capable of doing what Salika just did, they have to be writers. They have to be producers. They have to be mixers. They have to be their own entities. So, you know, Phineas and Billy could do it. You know, Taylor could do it. There's a handful, but the list ends real quick.
Yeah.
Because you have to be able to go, hey, you know, Salika, Billy, I need this for this scene. Mm-hmm. You write a song that makes me feel this way for this scene. And so some of them are really bespoke, and some of them are just, you know, a flavor. Like, we would come up with who Lady Raven was and why she's different than Salika. And so in the beginning, Salika would write a song, and I go, that one's you. That doesn't feel like her. That's not Lady Raven. And then she would kind of try to musically understand where the sweet spot was. And then she wrote a song, and it was, I was like, woo, that's it. And then I realized, and she's like, why is that it? And I say, well, that's her because she is playful. And she's it's like, enjoys the drama of it, but she's very open about her feelings. She cares about her audience, whatever it is. I would add it. She sees herself as this person that the more vulnerable I am, the more sassy I am, the more that I'm being honest about myself. But she doubts whether she really is this person. And so, you know, so these are the things. And then she goes, oh, and then she starts writing more and more songs for that. So it has this kind of, and I was like, and you're selling an arena out. So this is really that everybody would, you recognizable themes and melodies that you hum, you can't get them out of your head. And so these were the prompts for those months.
So while writing, were you influenced by the songs? Or were the songs influenced by the script?
Scripts, yeah, that direction. So once there was the script I would write, then I was writing the script and I said, Salika, looks like we're going to need 14 songs. And you'll see that in the movie, like, there's a song about her father, that, and I need that to be, so that has to speak to that. There's a song when she brings the little girl up. I don't know what I want that to feel like yet, but you know it has to speak to that. So those were moments like that. And, you know, I think there should be a feature in the middle where you bring someone up, so you have to do it with someone else. So there has to be this, like, hey, I got this person, and they arrived. You know, all these pieces had to be there. And then she started to kind of score his excitement. Some of the songs are like, because he finds it very playful when he's caught. So these individuals don't get super scared. They get stimulated as they get very close to being caught. As they run towards it. They run towards the danger. You know, my favorite thing I studied was the top profilers that chase these guys. They'll be flown into, like, let's say a city where there's a lot of serial killing, and they'll talk to all the federal people and all the police in a room, and he'll say, here's one thing I can tell you. You have already talked to him.
Yeah, yeah. I really like the scene where he's moving through the police. That was brilliant.
And I like the scene on the rooftop.
it's almost like a shark.
Yes.
And he's aware that
they're looking, and he's right here, but they can't.
Pretty fine definition of his face, just for 2 seconds, and then he gets back.
Yeah,
and
he drops and comes back.
Yeah, that particular take, that last take where he became dark, and he bumps the last guy. You know, it was a really interesting take. That he did that in the last take, and I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
He dropped it a hair early. He's pissed. You know.
Yeah.
How difficult is it to handle 20,000 extras.
Mm. You know, it was very interesting because if you're saying to thousands of extras, the building's collapsing and aliens are coming. Yeah, okay, everyone, yeah, and action. Yeah. They're all like, "Oh, ah!" And you're like, "Cut, cut, cut! Why are you doing that?" And they're, "That's an alien! Oh my God, an alien!" You know, they're acting, and that's not great because then you're asking thousands of people to be great actors. That's not a thing. Yeah, okay. But in this case, we were like, "Come into this arena, sit down in the arena. Hey, you guys are at a concert," and so they know what that feels like. Okay, and then we gave them the music beforehand. So they knew the songs, and then where the lights went down, and we had a full real concert. So they just were watching the concert and reacting, and they were really enjoying themselves. And we just turned on the cameras, you know. So it was a very things you saw were very organic, and we did one song a day, and put on a real concert. So they weren't pretending.
Nice,
yeah.
But how did you handle the scenes between father and daughter? When they were talking, and was there always live music in the background?
Yeah, so very complicated. Exactly, yeah, that what you're so, saying. Yeah. So what we would do is, you have it's super technical. Well, how? Okay. Should I try?
Let's
to,
hear
so,
it.
Yeah. So you would do Salika, and you know, would do the whole performance up there with the dancers and everything, and they're all watching, and then we would cut into something called a thump track. So you just hear boom, boom, boom in the rhythm of that particular song. Mm. Just on, so it goes like she's singing, and then it goes cuts to a thump track. He says the dialogue loud, but all the extras have earpieces in, so they're still hearing the thump track of, so their movements are exactly the same.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, meaning all the ones that are seen close. Right that way, and the crowd is hearing that, so they can keep it going. But the ones very very close are still hearing the song, you know, being sung, and so they keep singing the song. So it's a complicated thing. And as soon as he's done the dialogue, thump track goes away, and it goes live again. And it's a very very complicated thing. But they got used to it, and I would teach all the extras how to do this so that we don't have to choose. I don't want them pretending.
Yeah,
and so Salika and those guys, they would also hear the thumb track and keep doing all the movement so that they didn't miss a beat about what was actually happening.
Boy, that's
super complicated.
There's so many moving parts.
It is
crazy. But yeah. How did you get?
It's quite insane.
Yeah. It's insane. How did you?
I wanted it to be a real concert, so I don't want to pretend, because you can feel this stuff. You know, like when you watch in movies and there's, even if it's a real singer and they're playing a song, they're pretending.
What's the worst movie you have seen?
No, I won't tell.
And why is it A Star is Born?
You feel in some songs that you see in movies that, oh, that's not real.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
That's not that dance move, that costume, that lighting, that song. Doesn't represent a world that really exists, you know?
Yeah, I see it in The Bodyguard. I think The Bodyguard was typical for that. Yeah. Very artificial. I don't like it.
You have to put so much love into it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, if you went to, like, same thing, like if they went to a gallery and somebody just made up paintings, you'd be like, that's not a real painter, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
That kind of, you know it. Or when you see a scene, like, say, there's a riot or something like that, we can smell it's not real.
Okay.
Because each person has to have a reason they were there and why they chose on that day. You know, it's complicated to make it real.
Mm.
It's no spoiler to say this movie includes 228 twists. Do you write it backwards? Is there first the idea of twists and you write it from the end to the start?
You know, this one was very different again. I wish I wrote the way I wrote this one. I don't write this way, which is I didn't know where it was going.
Really?
Yeah, and I just kept writing. And that's the way novelists write most of the time. Like I hear Stephen King, that's how he writes. He's like, what's going to happen? Then he gets up in the morning. He does it every day of his life because I can't wait to see what happens.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know where it's unfolding to. And this had that birth to it. And I don't know why this particular one. Maybe because it all takes place on one day. Maybe it's, you know, it's one sequence. I'm not sure why I was so comfortable just letting it figure out. Like. I'm trying to talk without giving away anything. The movie stopped way earlier than where the movie stops in the first pass.
Yeah, and that's my question. And then how much of your darlings do you have to kill?
It wasn't. Well, there was a few, but that wasn't as much the predominant factor as, oh, that's why. Oh, that's why. Okay. And then I realized as a writer, oh, this was the movie. This was what's happening from the beginning, and I didn't realize it, that it unfolds into this movie, a specific thing between two people, that's what I was watching, and it feels very satisfying. So I had that satisfaction moment as a writer, and then the audience has it. But each movie's different. Sometimes you wrestle it for months and fight it and boom, you know, each way in is different.
What makes... sorry. Yeah.
In new movies, you prefer to have these confined spaces. If it's, a village or a house with grandparents. And why is that exactly? What is it about these confined spaces that interests you?
They really do. I think, limitations are my favorite. I love it. Like, first of all, you come to my house, it's natural wood, there's no stain on anything, it's just very simple. I prefer minimal artistic things. Like, I always tell the cast and crew that we make sushi, that's what we do. Least amount of ingredients at the highest quality, that's what we do. And then the audience will taste it, you don't need to keep adding. So the limitations are a great thing. And then I use your imagination to finish the painting. The best thing that ever happened was the shark didn't work in Jaws. That's the best thing that could have happened. Change cinema, because it didn't work. So you can only glimpse it. A barrel, a fin, movement of water, that's it, sound, and that made it, partially we all finished the painting in that. And so that, I believe in that, the theory of incompleteness. It becomes bigger. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Actually, I heard you recently talk about Jaws, and you said that its balance is basically perfect. Yeah. It's funny, it's scary at the same time. Has that shifted, looking back at Unbreakable and then The Visit and now Trap, has that approach to storytelling shifted during your career?
It has. I believe what you're asking is in particular to humor.
And it
has. I think it was always my instinct, and I ran away from it early in my career because there weren't examples for me of what I wanted to do, which was kind of the dark and the funny together. And it just wasn't there in the marketplace, and I didn't have evidence of anything succeeding in that way. So I was very scared of it. In fact, the industry kept on saying, well, that won't work because humor reduces stakes, and the god is thriller, and you're hurting yourself. You can't make fun of the movie. You can't make it becomes, the sinus curves are canceling each other out. And so I believed that for a while, and then The Visit was really for me. I did do it in Signs. There was a lot of humor in Signs, but I did do it occasionally, but not with the kind of openness that I was courageous enough to just like, I love it, but Visit was where it switched for me. And I just said, I think you're all wrong. I'm going to go do it. I'm going to mortgage my house. And I believe they both work with each other to create kind of this joyous, thing. So like on our New York premiere, I've said, as many human beings as you can get in a room to watch the movie, like old days. So we had 1,000 people, and it was absolutely raucous because they were laughing and screaming and clapping and laughing, screaming and gasping. And then there was full joy. It was just joy because it's contagious when you're gasping and, oh no, like all of that stuff. So it's a live art form. I let myself do it, and then I did it all with Servant as well. I made sure there was humor everywhere in Servant, the TV show, on Apple TV show. Sure. And then here, this is me being like super buoyant, super, super, like you're supposed to laugh the whole time from the beginning all the way to the last thing and, the end, the very end.
Yeah, it's just a good time actually seeing him navigate this maze, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I really like the moments when his daughter is telling him, "Dad, you act crazy. What's wrong with you? Oh, let's go down there.
Nice to see it in the movie."
Yes. Maybe they're close down there.
Yeah, but Josh Hartnett is brilliant in it, because he has to balance. He has to get out. But in the same time, he has to be a nice dad, loving dad. And that's brilliant played.
Was Josh Hartnett your first choice?
In it always is like an energy that you put out in the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way I make movies, you know, I pay for them and I kind of put it out and I say, hey, this is the type of movie that I want to make. This is the character so specific. And this has happened to me, you know, multiple times now, which is, you know, put something very, very, very specific and exactly the right human being comes in the door.
Okay.
And whether that's Haley Joel Osment or Bryce Dallas Howard in The Village or James McAvoy in Split or Josh Hartnett in this, because, like, no one could have played the part better.
And was it all about the smile of Josh Hartnett?
No, you know, it's weird. It was, he has three daughters. I have three daughters. He doesn't live in Hollywood. I don't live in Hollywood. Mm. You know, we were successful in our 20s. We wanted to leave the industry, came back again under our own terms. There's lots of energy things.
Yeah.
But he's a superstar that is totally willing to take risks. That combination is almost unheard of. I mean, just unheard of. So just the perfect guy. He just gets, you know, the tones that I'm going for. So he brings, he pulls it out, you know?
Mm. Okay. What was what was it like to collaborate with your daughter every day on set?
It's an interesting thing. Our house is a house of artists. It's not, it's just how we relate, you know? Mm. It wasn't much different than how we relate, you know? Yeah. We all talk about art all the time. It's a serious business at our house. This is not a kind of house of, you know, opportunity or exploitation. That's just not where we're coming from. We're coming from, you know, what does this sound mean? What does jazz make a human being feel without the repetitive thing? Those literally are dinner table conversations and understanding it. Why does someone return even the philosophical conversation to a movie that is, you know, a repetition of a previous movie? Why is there so much comfort in that for a human being? What safety does that give us? These are literally every single moment of our lives we're having these conversations. Mm. So now we're just having it on the set about this particular thing. And Salika's, you know, world-class musician. So since 4 years old, 23 years, 24 years, been working at the highest level. And so being able to talk about who the character is and what we need from it. So then sometimes she would write a song like Liar, where the song is ironic and he's like, oh, I can't believe my daughter's like singing a song about a liar.
And
he's trying to dance, you know. And sometimes he gets into the groove because it's Lady Raven's being mischievous and he's like, yeah, I'm matching you, you know. And in the graphic novel of it all, they're against each other. The butcher character who's compartmentalized, and that's his superpower, versus Lady Raven, who's connected to everyone, and that's her superpower.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm a movie buff all my life, and he's my son. And
what? You didn't tell me that.
Sorry.
Wow. And
I still have got my hair, so.
Yeah, I'm a little short. Yeah, that's another story.
I'm the granddad of both.
But when he was born, I couldn't wait to see all my favorite movies through his eyes again, to rediscover them through his eyes. So I guess I had, we saw a lot of movies that was not age appropriate. Mm. So my question is, with what movies do you traumatize your daughters, your kids?
Well, the two older ones really loved scary and darker things, so they watched it a hair earlier than the youngest one, who's very scared of things.
Yeah.
So she watched my movies much later in her life than the other two, who saw them earlier. And I showed the other two them in order on their birthdays, like the way I shot it in order. So each of their birthdays, I would show Sixth Sense at 10, and then Unbreakable at 11. And we have like a big deal about it as we show them each birthday.
Yeah, and what movies from other artists, from Spielberg or from...
Oh, yeah, they're, you know, again, movies are sacred at our house. So, yeah. You know, I don't know if it's the same in your house with your dad, but sure. It's absolutely sacred. You come, when they bring their friends over, we say jokingly, but it's not, we're not joking. Mm. Don't talk, don't comment, don't get on any phone. Mm. You don't, we don't do that here. I'm sure you're really funny, but don't talk during the movie. Okay? I'm sure you're really witty and you know all that stuff. And every thought that comes into your head, it's not gold. Don't say it out loud. Mm-hmm. You know, like we'll be like, just watch the movie.
Just experience.
Yeah, just experience it. And so the kids are always like that because they're not used to, as you said, I was like, if not, get out. You know, this is a house that's sacred. This is sacred. So they always tell their friends, hey, my dad's not kidding. Don't. If you want to watch it, let's watch it. And they do, and they love it. And then they're having the experience and we talk about it. And it's beautiful.
Yeah.
What's your own favorite movies of your own? Is there a favorite movie or is it ever?
It changes and evolves. It is always, you know, always the newest because it represents where I am. But
of course,
you know, it changes and undulates my relationship to who I was at that time. So they're all so much about me. Most of them are real reflections of who I am at that time. And so I don't, you know, it's funny. It's like an actor who makes a choice in the moment and you go, what was that thing you did? And they go, I don't know. I was just reacting. And that so much of it is like that for me in making movies that I don't even recognize. Like I opened up like scripts and I'm like, if you put a lie detector on me, I'd swear I didn't write it.
But you have write some twists for eternity. No one can use it. You know, just the twist in Sixth Sense. Mm-hmm. It's just
nobody else could use it.
Is it that are you sitting there and say that's the twist? That's the one twist.
It's never like that. It's that's the way I think. Again, it's consumed, and you know,
of course,
one journalist said that to me is like, do you get the same question of like twists and do you feel suffocated? I was like, I said this is a conversation you're having amongst yourselves. I feel like I'm not even involved in this conversation. You guys are just talking to each other over 30 years, you know? So it's an interesting, I'm like, you've been having it between yourselves. It really doesn't reflect how I feel about movies at all. I mean, I'm in the thriller genre primarily, which is essentially muscular mysteries.
Okay.
That is the genre I'm in. So it's a mystery.
For us, it's the magic of the thriller. It's just the magic touch.
What the characters are going to learn something.
Yeah,
they're going to because it's a mystery. Why is this happening? Yeah. What is going on? You know, that kind of thing. And that joy of figuring it out is lovely. Like puzzle pieces are lovely. You know, when I was writing Signs, I'm not sure. I think I was, thinking, wow, there should be something that comes together for them that seems coincidental. That was like something in my head, you know, that saves them.
Yeah. So
our last question.
Oh, man. What can the audience expect when they see Trap in the movie theaters?
We know it.
We know it, but not the audience.
You know, I think a real theatrical experience, the whole concept was to have the immersion of being in a concert, that feeling that I saw a real concert, and the immersion of being in a very taut thriller at the same time. So you get both colors and mixing those two kind of live experiences together to make a very unique and intense experience. It's meant to be watched in the movie theaters, and you're supposed to have that gambit of feelings of joy and fun, and then, you know, absolute terror.
Yeah,
I think you totally nailed it with this one.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah, you really did. So that's all.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Good luck with the movie. And we can't wait.
Great to meet you, your son, your granddad.
Thanks.
Take care, guys.
Thank you very much.
Kuckuck. Tja, hallo. Ein ereignisreicher Vormittag liegt hinter uns. Das Interview, auf das wir so lange gewartet haben, liegt hinter uns. Und es ist eigentlich genauso geworden, wie wir es uns erhofft haben, oder?
Ja. Ja, ich dachte mir echt nur was geschenkt. Nein, es ist genauso geworden, wie wir es erhofft haben. Wir haben einigermaßen fehlerfrei, einigermaßen intelligente Fragen gestellt. Mr. Shyamalan war überaus Shyamalan, Mann.
Guten Tag. Danke.
Wir keine Angst. War überaus charmant und
genau.
Ja, war schicki.
Er war redselig und wir haben noch den Herrn Hartnett. Der ist uns buchstäblich über den Weg gelaufen.
Ja.
Und
du hast ihn sofort verschreckt.
Ich habe ihn sofort verschreckt.
Super Typ, so groß wie der Kölner Dom.
Ja, ganz genau. Ja. Nein, aber
er hat hinterhergerufen, er wäre gut gewesen in der Stadt.
Ah ja, Spoiler.
Er hat sich umgedreht gerufen. Thank you. Ja. Das ist ja schon schön.
Ja.
Und ansonsten waren wir im Adlon, einem wirklich eher weitläufigen Hotel. Viel Flitter, viel Marmor,
genau.
Viel Kikriki.
Ja.
Wir haben heute Morgen den Film gesehen, zu nachtschlafender Zeit um 8.30 Uhr.
Genau, guter
Thriller, muss man sagen.
Guter Thriller, ja.
Setting, guter Thriller, gut gemacht.
Spannend, witzig.
Spannend, spaßig,
ja.
Toll gespielt von Josh Hartnett. Ja, mehr weiß ich, mir ist halt warm so.
Das ist auch Emma Chalamans feste Rolle.
Ja, ja, genau.
Emma Chalamans am besten gespielte Rolle, sehr charmant.
Ja, also, ja, es war, ja, also ich kann nur immer wieder sagen, es ist genauso geworden, wie ich es mir erhofft habe und noch mehr. Und von daher sage ich, alles Gute auch beruflich und ich hoffe, euch hat es auch gefallen. Okay, ciao.
Ja. Lutsch mich rund und nenn mich Bärbel, der Podcast. Mit Ständer, Breiter und Rehbein. Berg, Streh, mit Streiter, Bänder und Strehberg.